you may have noticed, it is a fast day today, so I might be a little bit lighter here this morning, but so we've been discussing this paragraph, starts two lines above the underlined section here, about the transition of the Torah, Shabbat from Moshe to the next generation. We discussed first that he didn't write it, but he taught the whole thing to the Beis Din of Shivim Zekenim, and he and Elazar, Pinchas, and Yeshua are mekabel it, and to Yeshua he gave it and was metzaveh it. So we discussed last week about the difference between what it means that he was masar and mitzaveh Yeshua, what it means that that Yeshua, Elazar, Pinchas, and Yeshua were mekabel the Torah, but Moshe was moser the Torah, gave over the Torah to Yeshua. And we discussed last week that this is the that there's such a position in Chalitzah. We saw in the Rambam and the Ramban and others the position in Klal Yisrael in every generation of the Omid Tachas Moshe Rabbeinu, someone who takes the place, who represents or continues the position of Moshe Rabbeinu in every generation, and that's the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. And that even though Elazar, Pinchas, and Yeshua were all in the category of Mekablim, they were all in the category of those who received the Torah and could say about the Torah Shebaal Peh, could say Kach Kibalti, that this is the tradition I received, and then no one would argue, that would be the end of the of discussion, but that only Yehoshua had the Masira of the Torah, was given over to be in charge of the Torah, the one in charge of the transmission of the Torah, and that he was the Omid Tachas Moshe Rabbeinu, the first in the Shalshalas, in the chain of those who are Omid Tachas Moshe Rabbeinu. We talked about the different levels of the Nisiyim throughout the history of Klal Yisrael, that there were the Nisiyim who were in more of a position of centrality, and the Nisiyim who needed the support of their Beis Din, and all those things that we discussed last week. So I just wanted to discuss this week a couple of things in the way the Rambam differentiates between Yehoshua and Elazar and Pinchas. So we have the underlined line today. The Elazar u'Pinchas Yehoshua shloshtan kiblu mimoshe. Elazar, Pinchas, and Yehoshua all received from Moshe Rabbeinu. Uli Yehoshua shehu talmido shel Moshe Rabbeinu masar Torah shebaal peh v'tziva aleha. And to Yehoshua, who was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, the student of Moshe Rabbeinu, he gave the Torah shebaal peh, and he was metzaveh him, he made him in charge of it, he commanded him over it. V'chein Yehoshua kol yimei chayav liman al peh. And so too, Yehoshua, all of his life, he taught the Torah, the Al-Peh, he taught it orally. So we'll get to that next underlying section at the end. But, so just a couple of questions here. Right now, the Rambam is very medactic, is very exact in his language. So just a couple of points to pick up on here. So the first thing is that I think most of us could count to three. And therefore, we want to understand, why is it that the Rambam tells us Elazar, Pinchas, Yehoshua shloshtan kiblu Moshe? Why does he tell us the three of them all received from Moshe? Right? Once you've said Elazar, Pinchas, and Yehoshua, so we know that it's three of them. So why is the Rambam telling us, specifying that there are three of them? The second thing is that Yehoshua, this is, keeping track, the third time that Yehoshua has been mentioned so far in this introduction. So why all of a sudden here does the Rambam feel it's necessary to tell us who Yehoshua is? And Yehoshua, who by the way is the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, he is the one who Moshe Rabbeinu was moser the Torah to. So Yehoshua has already been mentioned a couple of times. And so why here suddenly is it necessary to tell us you know, to give us Yoshua's personal qualifications, what's it called in the army, your credentials. Why is it necessary to give Yoshua's credentials here at this point? Now, seemingly, just to answer that question, that this is, you know, Yoshua was the one who is Moser the Torah, who he handed the Torah over to, so this Shehu Talmido Shel Moshe, that he was the Talmud of Moshe, is seemingly, you know, in the Sinas Tam, seemingly providing the explanation for why Moshe gave the Torah over to Yehoshua. So the explanation is that because Yehoshua was his Talmud, was his student, therefore he gave the Torah over to him. But that itself, so we don't find an explanation for anyone else. We're going to go through in the next few paragraphs, there's a long shalshalas, long chain of who received from who, this one received from that one, from that one, from that one. So none of them get an explanation for why they were chosen. So why by Yehoshua is it necessary to point out that he, since he was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore he was chosen for the Messiah of the Torah? A second question. Second two-part question. Third question, that just in the grammar of the way the Rambam expresses, the normal way to speak, I assume that if I thought about it, we could figure out if in English there's the same rule, but in Hebrew, you have the pe'ula, the act, and then the makabel ha-pe'ula, the recipient of that act. So you would not say to Mr. Weinstein, he gave the bagel, but you would say, well, you wouldn't say that anyways, because he's lactose, because he's no gluten. But you would say, and to Mr. Weinstein, you would not say, and to Mr. Weinstein, he gave the coffee, but he gave the coffee to Mr. Weinstein. Would be just, and there's nothing, you know, specifically incorrect about the first way. It's just a more awkward kind of way of phrasing the sentence. And similarly, the normal way to say it would have been, Umasar esatorah shabal pel Yehoshua, that he gave the Torah shabal to Yehoshua, saying Umasar torah shabal pel Yehoshua talmido. He gave over the Torah shabal pel to Yehoshua his Talmud. This way of phrasing it of Uli Yehoshua shahu talmido Masar torah shabal pel, and to Yehoshua who was his student, he gave over the Torah shabal pel. So it's nothing incorrect per se about expressing that way. But exactly what was the reason that the Rambam expresses it in this more abnormal, kind of awkward sentence structure? One last question, and then we'll try, and then we'll just put everything together, that the Rambam says to Yehoshua, who was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, he gave over the Torah Shabbat Pat, and we explain that the fact that he was his Talmud is the reason that he was chosen. So what exactly does the Rambam mean by that? Is it not the case that Elazar and Pinchas were also students of Moshe Rabbeinu? They, you know, they were Mekabel, as the Rambam just said in the sentence before, that Elazar and Pinchas are also Mekabel the Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore, you know, to be Mekabel the Torah, to be able to say that they know the entire Torah to the point that they can say Kach Kivalti. So obviously they were students of Moshe Rabbeinu. They had to have learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. So what exactly does the Rambam mean that Yehoshua, who was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, he gave the Torah to? That should seemingly apply to Pinchas and Elazar also. So four questions. Why did the Rambam emphasize the fact that there were three of them? Why is the Rambam at this point deciding to tell us that Yehoshua was Moshe's student? Or alternatively, why does the Rambam feel the need to give a justification for this step of the transmission of the Torah Shebaal Peh, which is not necessary in any other step of the Torah Shebaal Peh, not necessary in any other step of the transmission? Every other step, it just says that this Beis Din gave Yeshayahu received it from Amos and his Beis Din, and Micha received it from Yeshayahu and his Beis Din, and there's no necessary explanation of why each person was chosen. Third question, it was our sentence structure question, and the fourth question, that Pinchas and Elazar were also Talmidim of Moshe, so why is it singling out Yehoshua here as the Talmud of Moshe? So, will, a number of these questions answer each other, so we'll just try and go in order here. So the first point, so seemingly the reason that the Rambam is specifying that that Yehoshua, Pinchas, and Elazar, that there were three of them, is specifically to emphasize, an idea, if this is in the Chumash, obviously the way we dive from the Chumash is different than the way that will, expand upon the Rambam, but it's a similar idea that the Vilna Gaon says that whenever the Torah says Shnayim, whenever the Torah says the number two, whenever that it points out that there are two of something, says the Vilna Gaon, that's always extra, because we have a rule in the Torah of miut rabim shnayim, that the minimum of something being plural is two. So if you and we assume that therefore if something is identified as being plural without speaking out how many it is, so then it's means it's going to be two. So says the Vilna Gaon, it's always extra. So why does the Torah, whenever the Torah speaks out that there are two of something, it's always coming to tell you that there is, that they are similar in some way, that there's some way in which they are, in which they are parallel to each other, or which they are they are a replica of each other. And always the girl will explain in a number of places exactly what that similarity is. There's an interesting case by the two of the Kalim of the Beis Hamikdash, that they have two different weights. They're two of the different receptacles that they had, and when it's talking about the different things they made in the Beis Hamikdash to hold different spices or whatever it was, and one of them weighed 70 shekel, and one of them weighed, I think, 110 or 130 shekel, and the Targum there says that they were made with different amounts of metal, but they were not, one was not larger than the other, one was just thicker than the other. And the Vilna Gaon says that the Pasuk says, it says that there was this Kli and this Kli, and it says Shnehem Maleim Soles, that the two of them, both of them were full of Soles of fine flour. So the Torah is telling you that the two of them were full of the two of them, so that means that they were, if specifying that there were two, even though, we know it's two, so it's telling us that they're the same. In the way in which they were full of flour, the way in which they were filled was the same. That means that their base kibbol, the receptacle part, the internal cavity of them were the same. And therefore it must just be that one was thicker than the other, but they were the same size Kli in terms of how much they held. And that's what the Gra explains the Targum there. So even though the Kalim are different sizes, somehow he knows that they're made of different amounts of metal. Somehow he knows that the same size, one's just thicker, because of this Shnehem. And you find this in a number of places in the Torah, this idea of Shnehem, whatever, it's a Shnaim or Shnehem, the two of them, or two, that there's some similarity being expressed through that. So the Rambam here, obviously we don't learn the Rambam the same way, derech of expounding as the way we learn the Chumash, but the Rambam here says that Elazar, Pinchas, Yehoshua, Shlosh Dan Kiblu Moshe, seems the point being to sum them up, to group them together into one group of Kabbalah, is that each of that the three of them all had the same degree, the same level of Kabbalah, the same level each of them had received from Moshe Rabbeinu, to the point that equally each of them could have said kach kibalti. Each of them could have said that this is the Masorah that I received, and that would have been Nistal Kamachlokas, and that would have been the end of the Machlokas. And it was only in the days of the Avel of Moshe Rabbeinu that anything was forgotten. But the three of Moshe, Yehoshua, Yehoshua, Elazar, and Pinchas, that all three of them, to the same degree, they are all equals in terms of their Kabbalah. And it's for that reason that the Rambam needs to give an explanation of why it was that Yehoshua was chosen. In every other generation of the Kabbalah, so the halakha is, let's skip a couple pages here, go to the third page. Actually, you know what, maybe we'll just go in order to the second page. Where did the Rambam get this from, that Yehoshua, Elazar, and Pinchas were all equals? So the Gemara says, Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Vav says, The Amar Rama Braid Rabba, the Itamer Rebbe Hillel, Braid Rebbe Vals, Miyamos Moshe the Ad Rebbe, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, Lo Matzinu Torah Gedula V'Makom Echad. We do not find the singular Torah leadership and the leadership of the Jewish people, the Torah and Gedula, in one place, meaning in one person. That by Moshe Rabbeinu, you had the totality of the Torah, and you also had that he was, you know, served for all intents and purposes as the Melech. He was the leader of the Jewish people. And you don't find that again from Moshe until you get to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. So the Gemara challenges this a number of times. In the next 10 lines of the Gemara are all different cases the Gemara challenges this assertion. The Gemara's first one, Velo, Ha Ava Yehoshua. What about Yehoshua? When Yehoshua was around, wasn't that the unrivaled greatness in Torah and Yehoshua was the leader? Says the Gemara, no. Hava Elazar. There was also Elazar. That Elazar was also there at the same time as Yehoshua, and therefore Yehoshua was not unequaled in the Torah leadership. Now the next line the Gemara says, Va'ahava Pinchas. Wasn't there Pinchas? And says, no, because there were the Zekanim, and the Zekanim weren't equal to Pinchas in Torah. But if you look down at the bottom of the page, where I have this little arrow, and the Girsa of Rabbeinu Hananel here, has a different Girsa of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Va'ahava Yehoshua, I wasn't there Yehoshua. The Gemara answers, Hava Elazar, Bahate, that there was the Elazar with him who was his equal. Ki Kamrin and Delek Achabade. So the Gemara's next question is, Va'ahava Elazar, Hava Pinchas. The next question says, okay, but now wasn't there Elazar that after Yehoshua was Nifter, Elazar was still alive, and so therefore wasn't there Elazar who was unrivaled? And the Gemara says, no, Hava Pinchas, because even after Elazar passed away, the Pinchas was still around. So you see from the Gemara here, at least according to Rabbeinu Hananel's text of the Gemara, that Elazar was equal to Yehoshua, and Pinchas was equal to Elazar. So you see in the Gemara that the three of them, that Elazar, Yehoshua, and Pinchas were all, in terms of the Torah authority, being the central Torah authority, all three of them were equals. So, therefore, to pick a successor, to pick who's going to be the one who should be the one to take over the Mesorah, or the Mesirah, of Torah Shabbat Peh, so the Rambam has to give a reason. Normally, turn the page again, in the halachos of the Mesirah of Torah Shabbat Peh, so who is chosen as the Nasi? Normally, it's not such a complicated question. The Rambam writes that we saw this, I think last week we saw the beginning of this halacha, but the Rambam writes in Perek Aleph, Halacha Gimel, Hilchos Sanhedrin, talking about the establishment of the Batei Dinim, and that they would first set up the Beis Din HaGadol in the Mikdash, that was the Sanhedrin HaGadol, and the Rambam writes it consisted of the parallel to Moshe, the Zechinim of the 71 of the Chachamim, the HaGadol b'Chachma Shebekulam, the one who was the greatest in Chachma, in Torah knowledge, Shebekulam among all of them, Moshe Menoso Rosh Aleihen, he is set up as leader over them, the Hu Rosh HaYeshiva, he is the Rosh Yeshiva, the Hu Shekoren Oso Chacham Nasi B'chol Makom, that is the person that the Chacham referred to as the Nasi, the Hu HaOmi Tachas Moshe Rabbeinu, and he stands in place of Moshe Rabbeinu, so this is the person who takes over Moshe Rabbeinu, whoever is the Gadol B'chachma of each generation, or after each Nasi passes away, or I guess step down theoretically, I suppose, after each Nasi ends his reign. So whoever was Gadol B'chachma, whoever was the wisest, the most knowledgeable among the next generation, he took over as the next Nasi. So for most of the chain of tradition, so the Rambam has no need to tell us who was the one who took over, because in each generation, you go back to the first page, the Rambam writes that Eli received from Pinchas, and Shmuel received from Eli, and David received from Shmuel, that certainly there were more people who were mekabelim, certainly more people than just, you know, one person in each dar who was mekabel the Torah, who received a Kabbalah and Torah Shebaal Peh. But in each generation, the Rambam singles out as the mekabel, the one single person who was the highest in the chain, who was the at the top, who had received the strongest Masorah, and the person who was the God of the Chachma. And that person, so there's nothing more that needs to be said after we know that he was the head of the group of Mekablim. He was at the top, he was the God of the Chachma among all of those who were the Mekablim of the Torah Shebaal Peh. So then, that's the end of the discussion, that he's the next Navi, and there's nothing more complicated than that that needs to be explained. And he would be the Rosh Hashiva, he would be the Nasi, he would be the Omid, the Mako, he would be Omid Tachas Moshe Rabbeinu, and he would be the one in charge of leading the Beis Din of that generation and determining the methodology through which the Torah Shebaal Peh would be taught and transmitted in that generation. That would be the end of that discussion. But when it came to the generation immediately after Moshe Rabbeinu, so there was a unique question in that generation, that if there are three individuals who are all equals in their reception and their Kabbalah of the Torah Shebaal Peh, and all of them equally could say Kaf Kibalti and Nistalga Kol Yikuach and end the discussion, all of them, there was no one Gavul B'Chachma, there was no one person who was ahead of everyone else. So in that generation, in that specific link in the chain of the Masira of Torah Shebaal Peh, so there's a unique question. So how do we decide who should be the one to be Mekabel the Torah? How do we decide who should be the one to receive the mantle of Torah Shebaal Peh, to be the one to be in charge of Torah Shebaal Peh for the next generation? And for that, the Rambam tells us that Yehoshua, because he was the Talmid of Moshe Rabbeinu, because he was the student of Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore, even though it was a tie, you know, the tiebreaker was that Yehoshua, who was the Talmid of Moshe Rabbeinu, was the recipient of the leadership of Torah Shebaal Peh for the next generation. And the rule, the idea the Rambam seems to be telling us is that if there were that, you know, the first criteria for being the leader of Torah, for taking over the position of the leader of Torah Shebaal Peh, first and foremost is whoever is the most expert, has the highest level of expertise in Torah Shebaal Peh. But if there is some other, if there's a tie, if that's not going to be a determining factor because there's more than one person who fits that criteria, so then they're going to have to go to other points, something else, to figure out who is going to be the leader of Torah Shebaal Peh. There's not going to be a presidium. We're not going to have a group of leaders. There is in every generation one person who is Omid Tachas Moshe Rabbeinu. And if there's no way to determine it based on Chachma alone, so says the Rambam that there are other things that they would go to, that there are other attributes, other ideas that they can go to determine who should be the next leader. So what does it mean that Yehoshua was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu? What does it mean that Yehoshua Shehu Talmido, Elazar and Pinchas also seem to have been Talmidim of Moshe Rabbeinu? So Rashi, Pirkei Avos, it says Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, and he gave it over to Yehoshua. So the commentary here on the top right is attributed to Rashi. I think there is some doubt about that, but I think it's generally assumed to be the commentary of Rashi. But we'll just call it Rashi. Rashi here writes, "Umisaral Yehoshua, he gave it over to Yehoshua." The law Elazar lepinchas. Rashi is bothered that says that Moshe gave the Torah over to Yehoshua to Yehoshua and not to Elazar and Pinchas, the low Shivim Zakenim, and it's not the Machane and not to the 70 Zakenim. Why shall Lo Ratzel Lamasra Ella Lamishaya Mainis Atmo Minurov Baole Achma? He only wished to give the Torah over to someone who was Mamus Atzmo, who killed himself, who worked his heart out in learning the Torah in the Olei HaChma, the tent of Chachma, v'kan Hashem tov v'olam, v'zehu Yehoshua, that is Yehoshua, sh'ne'amar Yehoshua ben Nun na'ar lo yanish mitov v'olam, that Yehoshua was dedicated to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he never left the tent of Moshe Rabbeinu, the tent where Moshe Rabbeinu taught Torah. And the Medrash tells us, Chazal say that, what does that mean? That Yehoshua, Yehoshua would come early and leave late to organize the base Medrash, to set up the base Medrash, and he was Meshamesh Moshe Rabbeinu on top of just the learning of the Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu. He served Moshe Rabbeinu, and he was the one. He was the, you know, I guess what we call the certain extent, the Gabbai, the Shamus, who he organized the base Medrash, and he facilitated Moshe's teaching of Torah, and he was the one who was always there with Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu was leading Klal Yisrael, so Yehoshua is the one who's always with him. We find that, you know, that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, so that Yehoshua came at least partway with him, Yehoshua had his own area of Har Sinai where he was, and he waited for Moshe. When Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Har Sinai, Yehoshua is the one who's there. Yehoshua is there with Moshe when he breaks the Lukos. That Yehoshua had a specific, above and beyond just having been at Moshe Rabbeinu's lessons, that Yehoshua was there with Moshe Rabbeinu, that he was the Mesharis of Moshe Rabbeinu throughout the time of Moshe Rabbeinu's leading and teaching of Klal Yisrael. So, just to make it clear, this is, you know, seems to be what Yehoshua did. Is this like, you know, Yehoshua did like a really big mitzvah, so his reward, he gets rewarded that he's given preferential treatment and he's chosen to be the Nasi. So, if you look, turn the page. The Rambam writes, "V'ne'amar al sigol hamayos hamidotios." And so the Rambam here is in towards the end of Mor Nevochim is defining what Chachma is, and he says that there are really four different ideas that Chachma could be describing. It can be talking about you know, knowledge of different, you know, truths. And it can be talked, so it talks about four different things, but the one of them that says, the second one that he says, is that Chachma can describe Sigo Hamayos Hamidotios, that it can describe the achievement of basically character perfection, perfection or development of good midos can also be called chachma. And he says v'zikenav v'ziknav yechakim, the elders will have chachma, which he says is being used in this way of that they will have developed themselves, be yeshishim chachma, that by elders, by those who are aged, you find chachma. And says the Rambam, ki adavar hanikna be'etzem hazikna hu ha'itud l'kabal samayos amidotios, that which is comes by nature to in old age, that which is, you know, the destiny of zikna, is not being smarter or wiser than others. You can have that. That's not a natural consequence of being older. You might have life experience, but the you know, having chachma in terms of knowledge is not the automatic result of age, but having gone through life and having experience, you know, living and having gone through a lot, the normal consequence or the normal result of zikna is kabbalas miles amidotios, is having reached a certain level of personal refinement. Says the Rambam that an older person has reached a certain level of personal refinement. If you turn the page back to the beginning, why am I bringing that up? That underlying section, a few lines later, says, Achia Hashiloni miyotei Mitzrayim haya, v'leidi haya, v'shama mimoshe. The Achia Hashiloni was, we'll talk more about this section in its own when we get there, but Achia Hashiloni was one of the people who left Mitzrayim, and he was, and he heard the Torah from Moshe. And Kapamim Moshe was young in the days of Moshe, who kibel mi David ubeis dino, and he received the Masorah from David HaMelech and his Beis Din. So we'll talk about when we get there exactly what it means that he was received from Moshe, from David, if he was, you know, hundreds of years older than David HaMelech. So what exactly does it mean that he was Mekabel from David HaMelech? But one thing that you see clearly is that Achia Hashiloni, who was the elder, he was certainly the oldest person around at the time. Well, I don't know if you say Pinchas was Eliyahu and Eliyahu was still around, but I mean, that itself could fit into the same point we're going to make, is that the person who was the most refined, you know, he's been around since Moshe Rabbeinu. He certainly has the Yeshishim Chacham, certainly the personal character development that comes through life experience, that Achia Hashiloni was fit to be the Nasi of the Sanhedrin after David HaMelech, but he doesn't get it until his time comes, until he is the Gavah B'Chachma of Chachma Satora, even though he's the elder, he's the one with, you know, in the whatever other areas might be the most qualified candidate, but there's not, you know, a schus that because, you know, he just deserves it because he's done such great things, that's why he is going to be appointed the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. So Yehoshua, who was the Mashais of Moshe Rabbeinu, it does not seem logical that the reason why he was chosen was because he just did, you know, such a great mitzvah in serving Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore, you know, it's only right that he should be the one to take over. So, what exactly is the? It seems to be a milah in Torah, specifically a milah in Torah that is why Yehoshua deserves to be the one who takes over. Sorry. I can't drink water, so I can't clear my throat so easily. So, it seems to be specifically a milah in Torah, which gives Yehoshua the right to take over. So what exactly is this milah in Torah that Yehoshua has over Elazar and Pinchas, because he was the Masharis of Moshe Rabbeinu, because he was the prime Talmud, or the dedicated Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, exactly what does that give him, what leg does that give him as a milah in Torah over Elazar and Pinchas? So, I'm going to suggest the Sefer Ikrim, or Yosef Albo, writes that he asks a question. He says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai, so Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, raid Macher, Kishiches Amcha, Asher Elis Amerit Yisraim, Asu Egel Masecha, so that Hashem tells Moshe, you got to go down quickly from Har Sinai because the nation that you took out of Egypt has made an Egel Azav, and made an idolatry, an idol in there, and they're doing a Avodah Zarah. So Moshe comes down, he's carrying the Lukos, and Moshe gets to the towards the foot of Har Sinai, and he sees the dancing and the singing, and he sees that Kali Yisrael are worshipping an Egel. And at that point, Moshe Rabbeinu sees they're doing a Avodah Zarah, and he takes the Lukos and he casts them onto the ground. So asks Yosef Albo that Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, he knew God was a pretty trustworthy guy. Moshe Rabbeinu trusted God, I think. Moshe Rabbeinu at the level of Nevuah, where, you know, the Nevuah that he received, the communication he had with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, was crystal clear. He's on the top of Har Sinai, and Hashem tells him, Moshe, Klal Yisrael is doing a Avodah Zarah. So Moshe Rabbeinu was not, you know, at that point, you know, pretty sure, like, wow, that, you know, that could be. Moshe Rabbeinu knows now that Klal Yisrael are doing Avodah Zarah. So why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu does not throw the luchos down and smash the luchos until he gets down to the bottom of Har Sinai and sees that Klal Yisrael are actually doing Avodah Zarah? What exactly changed when Moshe Rabbeinu saw Klal Yisrael doing Avodah Zarah that he didn't know until then? Moshe Rabbeinu's not, he didn't just figure it out. Now he knew 100% clarity. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him. And Moshe Rabbeinu knows what, how to understand what Hashem says. So why exactly, what happened when he got to the bottom of Har Sinai? So says the Sefer Ikrim, he does not use this analogy, but he says that, you know, there's a difference between when you see the sign on the bench that says wet paint, and when you touch it and you get some on your finger. There's a quality of knowledge that comes through experience, which cannot be had through just intellectual awareness. If you are intellectually aware of something, it is anodoma, it's not comparable to knowledge that you have through having lived it and having experienced it. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, even though Hashem told him, and he knew darn well at that point that that was the case, but when he gets down to the bottom of Har Sinai, and he sees it with his own eyes, and now he knows it not just through being intellectually aware of it, but by experiencing it, at that point, Moshe Rabbeinu has it's a level of knowledge of, I guess, assimilating that knowledge, which is that much deeper, and it's that point that Moshe Rabbeinu casts the luchos down and breaks them. The point I'm trying to bring out is that there's a depth of knowledge that a person has through experiencing it, which is, even though it's not quantitatively greater, you don't know anything now that you didn't know before. Elazar and Pinchas and Yoshua might all know quantitatively the same amount, but Yoshua was the Masharis of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yoshua was the one who was with Moshe Rabbeinu. He was there watching Moshe Rabbeinu. He served Moshe Rabbeinu. He followed Moshe Rabbeinu around, and he didn't just hear the information of the Torah, but he watched Moshe Rabbeinu living the Torah, and he himself was a participant in that, and he was the one who was setting up the base medrash. And that Yoshua was therefore involved as in the experience of the Talmud Torah of Moshe. And therefore Yoshua was the Talmud, was the prime Talmud of Moshe. Was not just that therefore he had learned more information from Moshe than anyone else had, but that he had a deeper appreciation of the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu taught than anyone else did. And therefore Yoshua was the disciple who was the most qualified to take over after Moshe Rabbeinu. Before we get back to just tying in to answer the last question that we didn't answer yet, I want to perhaps a similar idea, even if it's not the same idea, but this Gemara discusses why it is that the halacha is Beis Hillel. And the Gemara says that Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, they had a whole series of machlokes, but one of their machlokes was that Beis Hillel held that the halacha was like Beis Hillel, and Beis Shammai held that the halacha was like Beis Shammai. And it says that for 3 years, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai had this argument back and forth that these said the halacha should be like them, and they said the halacha should be like them, until a baskol came out and said, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, these are both the words of God, the halacha to Beis Hillel, and the halacha is like Beis Hillel. And why? Because they are anavim, and they are shonim divrei Beis Shammai, kodim divreim, and they teach the words of Beis Shammai, they teach the opinion of Beis Shammai before their own opinion, and therefore the halacha is like them. So again, the question is, Beis Hillel, they were just such nice guys that, you know, Shemayim decided to give them a nice present and say that halacha was like them. Seemingly, that's not the way halacha works. So, what exactly was the machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? And why is the decision that because Beis Hillel were anavim, they were that humility and they taught Beis Shammai's opinion first, that the halacha should be like them? So, Rav David Karliner, Sheilas David, source Rav C. Berkowitz gave me, he writes that the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is that we have a halacha that no one argues with, which is acharei rabim lahatos, that when you have a machlokas, we follow the majority. But the question In that halacha, the halacha of Akar Rav and Mahatos, how does that go? Does that go according to Rov Chachma? According to where the most Chachma is? Or according to Rov Deos, where the most opinions are? And Beit Shammai were the Miut. They were the minority. But they were Chadadi Tvei. It says that they were more clever. They were sharper than Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel, they were also qualified, but they were the majority. Maybe they weren't as brilliant as Beis Shammai, as the Talmidim of Beis Shammai, but they were certainly qualified, and they were also the majority. So each of them held that the halakha of Akrei Rav and Mahatos following the majority says you should follow them. And for 3 years they had this machlokas back and forth, until the Baskol came out and said that the halacha is like Beis Hillel because they are anavim and they are shonim divrei Beis Shammai kodim divreihem, because they teach their opinion first. And says Rav David Karliner, that why does that explain why the halacha should go like them? Because since Beis Hillel were willing to teach Beis Shammai's opinion first, Beis Hillel, they had, in a certain sense, access to more information. Beis Hillel was ready to listen and process and understand Beis Shammai's opinion, and even so, they were still going to disagree with it. Beis Shammai, they were brighter than Beis Hillel, and maybe they didn't take the time to take Beis Hillel's opinion into consideration to the degree that they should. The same way that the halacha said, that the Gemara says that the halacha is not like Rabbi Meir because he was too smart. That's what the Gemara says. That Rabbi Meir was so bright that he could come up with 150 reasons. I think it's the Gemara says 150 reasons to be metaher a sheretz. 150 arguments why a sheretz, which the Torah says is tamei, that he came up with 150 reasons why really it should be tahor. That he was so brilliant that even if he was wrong, he could run circles around you. So no one else has the ability to, you know, kind of deal with his arguments, because even when even something which we know is wrong, he could convince you is right, because he was that brilliant. So Beis Shammai, they were smarter than Beis Hillel. So, you know, someone smart can still be wrong, and Beis Shammai, perhaps they didn't take the opinion of Beis Hillel into consideration, and therefore they arrived at their conclusion very quickly because they were so bright, and they didn't take anything else into consideration. But Beis Hillel, they were anavim, and they taught the opinion of Beis Shammai first, meaning they learned first the opinion of Beis Shammai, and after they had learned the opinion of Beis Shammai and weighed it against their own, and even having been exposed to Beis Shammai's opinion, still holding their own opinion. So we can have the same idea that there's more of a confidence in the rove of what Beis Hillel is dealing with. The rove chachma that Beis Hillel is dealing with now is taking more opinions into account. It is a greater rove of chachma because they are willing to assimilate the opinion of Beis Shammai as a greater rove of chachma, and therefore the halacha of Akrei Rav and Mahatos, of following the majority, is going to say to follow Beis Hillel. Not because it's just, you know, they're such nice guys, so let's be nice to them, but because their approach to how they learn Torah enabled them to have a more authoritative perspective on the Torah that they were learning. So again, the same idea that there's a mila in the Torah that they know itself, which determines how we should. Now this is a different question, because this was deciding who the halakha was like, not who the nasi was. But again, the same point, that when it comes to the Masorah of Torah, that the Masorah of Torah follows, goes after the Torah, where there's the greatest understanding and knowledge of Torah. So there you have that's where the Masorah of Torah follows. And therefore Yehoshua, who was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, even though in pure quantitative knowledge he might have been equal to Pinchas and Elazar, but in terms of his depth of understanding, because he was the Mashayis of Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore he was the one who was chosen to be the next link in the chain. Just to answer the last question that we left hanging, which was, why do we have why does the Rambam phrase the sentence that Yehoshua Shehu Talmido, Yehoshua, who was the Talmud, he was Moser the Torah Shabbat Peh, like now makes perfect sense, because the Rambam is not moving on to something else. If the Rambam was moving on and coming to the next point, so then it would make sense to start a new sentence and to say, Moshe taught the Torah to the Zakenim, and Yehoshua, Pinchas, and Elazar makabel it, and Moshe gave the Torah to Yehoshua. But this is not a new point that the Rambam is making. This is finishing the point before. The Rambam says it's a continuation of the same sentence, that Yehoshua, Elazar, and Pinchas all were makabel the Torah, and of those three, Pinchas, who was the Talmud, he's the one who Moshe gave the Torah to. But it's finishing the thought of the previous sentence, and therefore, in order to be a continuation of the previous sentence, it's picking up Yehoshua and Pinchas received it, and Yehoshua, we just mentioned, who was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, he's the one who was Moshe the Torah to. That's the explanation of why was Yehoshua the one who got the Maseiros HaTorah, even though there was the three of them were all equals in their Kabbalah of the Torah. But Yehoshua, who was the Talmud of Moshe, who had the dedication to experiencing the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, he was the one who had who was given the charge of the Torah for the next generation, to be in charge of the teaching and the transmitting of the Torah to the next generation. All right, we'll stop here.